This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The sitcom Seinfeld has made Jerry Seinfeld a star, and we're hoping it will do the same for my guest Jason Alexander, who plays Seinfeld's best friend, George. Jerry Seinfeld plays a less successful version of himself, a stand-up comic slowly on the rise. Whereas the character Jerry is reasonably self-confident, nice apartment, good income, George is both self-centered and insecure, devious, resentful, and usually broke. Jerry is trim, thick head of hair. George is stocky and balding. Here's a scene that shows how George can turn even victory into defeat. Jerry and George are talking about the party they went to the night before. George left the party with a woman from work.
What a mistake that party was. I never should have gone.
Yeah, me either.
Oh, come on.
What come on? Have you ever dated a woman that worked in your office?
I never had a job.
You know that anxiety you feel on a date? That's what I have every day now. My worst nightmares come true. Every day is a date.
That's one of Dante's nine stages of hell, isn't it?
Ava was one of the reasons I used to like going to work. She was a friend. Now we sleep together, and suddenly, I don't know how to talk to her. Every time I go to the bathroom, I pass her desk. I have to plan little patter. I spend half my day writing. Then afterwards, I sit in my office and analyze how it went. If it was a good conversation, I don't go to the bathroom for the rest of the day. I see her laughing and talking with other people. They're all so loose and relaxed. I think, that used to be me. I want to go back there again.
What are you going to do?
I have no choice. I'm quitting.
Of course, that scene was before the episode in which George tried to poison his boss and lost his job. Before co-starring on Seinfeld, Jason Alexander won a Tony Award as the narrator on Jerome Robbins' Broadway. In the film Pretty Woman, Alexander played the smarmy lawyer who propositioned Julia Roberts. I asked Jason Alexander to describe the character he plays on Seinfeld.
Oh, gosh. Better men than I have attempted that. George seems to be the universal less than every man. He is neurotic. He is, I guess, described as a classical loser. He tries very hard, perhaps too much. He's very nervous about life and about the city he lives in and the way he's going to be treated. He has, at varying times, an overinflated and an underinflated ego. But through it all, he seems to be able to maintain a pretty steady sense of humor about not only the things around him and the people around him, but about himself. And I guess that's his saving grace.
Now, the character of George seems to be the character that's based on the show's co-creator and head writer, Larry David. In fact, Larry David kind of told us that on the show. Uh-huh. So do you feel like you get any tips from, do you get any insights into George by watching the show's co-creator?
Well, you know, on Larry's behalf, George, I hope, is not quite as neurotic, or rather, Larry's not quite as neurotic as George. Actually, the George character did not start out, at least as far as I know, to be Larry David. When I was first shown the role, you know, when you do a pilot for a series, everything happens very quickly and you make quick decisions. And the first thing that came into my head was, this guy's like Woody Allen. And I did a rather shameless Woody Allen impression for the first couple of episodes. And slowly, as the writers got to know us and we got to know them and the show took shape, I started to see that Larry was throwing in a lot of incidents that happened to him, and the character was beginning to have a syntax, very much the way Larry talked. And I went, oh my God, I think the way to do this is to do Larry. And then I started studying Larry's physical tics and his rhythms and his humors. And it very gradually, and I don't know if it was a conscious effort on either one of us, but the character grew into being sort of an alter ego for Larry. So now, yeah, whenever I'm really stuck on how to do something, I either ask him, you know, Larry, how would you do this? Or I just try and imagine Larry in the situation, and it seems to work.
What's one of the things that you went to him for and said, Larry, how would you do this?
There are line readings sometimes. You know, not all the Seinfeld lines make sense to me right off the bat. You know, a lot of line readings. But line readings are a big thing on our show because, you know, we are populated by stand-up comics. Jerry, of course. Michael Richards was a stand-up. Larry David was a stand-up. Several of our writers were stand-ups. So they write very rhythm-y things. And, you know, I used to do a bit about how Jerry Seinfeld is the only guy in the world who will say the line, are you going to do it? In the following, most people would say, are you going to do it? Or are you going to do it? And Jerry would go, are you going to do it? Is it going to happen? And when I get stuck with some of the line readings, it's because I'm not falling into the Larry David, Jerry Seinfeld reading. So when I get to a line, are you going to do it? And it's not funny. And all of a sudden he says, well, you want to go, are you going to do it? And then all of a sudden somehow it becomes funny.
That's interesting. Yeah, that is how Seinfeld would say it, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm noticing, listening to you, that your voice isn't at all like George's voice.
No, not at all.
You have
You
have a much kind of lighter, quieter, more relaxed voice than he does.
Yeah, and hopefully devoid, for the most part, of the New York accent. Like I said, that all sort of developed from the, you know, I used to, when I really started, I was doing Woody Allen shamelessly, as I say, and, you know, George sort of became a watered-down version of that.
Well, yeah, George has a little whine in his voice, and his voice sometimes kind of cracks with nervousness, I think.
What do you mean, Terry?
Exactly.
Yeah, he. Well, you know, George takes everything to heart, I'm afraid, and is affected very deeply. He's a very emotional fellow.
Now, how much of George's style of neurosis and anxiety do you understand or do you share?
I understand almost all of it. I hope I don't share too much of it. I have been in therapy for a while, and if I shared too much of it, I would have to ask my money back. I've said before that I think George is possibly what I might have become had my life not gone so well. You know, had people not given me jobs and said, hey, nice job. If I hadn't met, a wonderful woman that decided to marry me and who loves me and takes care of me. And if my mother wasn't such a wonderful lady, and, you know, if I had more friends like Jerry and Elaine that are constantly sort of dishing me, I might have been much more George-like. Fortunately, my life went a little better than that. George is unemployed. George can't get a date. George doesn't think much of himself, and he is surrounded by friends that keep going, well, you know, he's George. That makes for a slightly more insecure person than myself.
Now, Jerry Seinfeld is not an actor. He's a stand-up comic. And according to Larry David, when a situation is written for Jerry that, you know, that he feels is out of character for himself as a person, he doesn't feel comfortable acting something out if he wouldn't do it as a person himself. So mm-hmm. Your character ends up with with that situation.
Yeah, usually it gets thrown to either Julia or myself. Jerry, to his credit, Jerry realized his limitations as an actor going into the show. And I think what has made him so appealing is that he doesn't do things he can't do. In fact, if you watch the show, you'll see that Jerry half the time is about to crack up at what's going on around him. And, you know, when I first started watching, I went, Jerry, you got to stop doing that. You're blowing it. But it actually has become part of the charm of the show and of his character. And Jerry in life, in public life, is not comfortable, with great shows of affection or sexuality. He very rarely gets hot under the collar or angry, or at least not to the point where it's expressed. So for him to do those things on camera would make him extremely uncomfortable. And subsequently, he doesn't do it very much. And if a scene calls for any kind of sexuality, they'll usually throw it to Julia. And if it calls for extreme emotionality, they'll usually throw it to me.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Jason Alexander, and he plays George Costanza in the sitcom Seinfeld. Was this your first TV experience?
Oh, gosh, no. I had done two other series before Seinfeld. One was a series that has an incredible longevity on the Lifetime cable network. Considering we only did one season, it was a show called ER. It was starring Elliot Gould and Mary McDonald about an emergency room in Chicago, which was an old Norman Lear series that had no ratings when it was on the air. I mean, it was like number 72 out of 72, but they have been repeating the 22 episodes that were done over and over and over on Lifetime, and people have been really responding to it.
Huh.
And then in 88, I had a series of my own out of New York called Everything's Relative, which I'm sure you remember. It was just a ratings hit. We shot 10 episodes and they aired 6, and then we went to lunch one day and we came back and everyone was gone and they said, well, that's it. So, no, it was not my first experience, but it was certainly my most successful one.
Well, were you bracing yourself for another big failure when you started?
Well, you know, honestly, I don't think any of us thought that the show would be a tremendous success. Excuse me. We all loved the script, and I thought it was one of the best things I had ever read. But I really went into it thinking the audience for this show is me. And I don't really watch television. So if we're depending on people like me to support us, it's just not going to be there. I knew, or I felt, that the show would not reach a mainstream audience. And so I thought, you know, we're going to be in and out. And in fact, when the pilot was done and it was audience tested, it tested horribly. And nobody wanted to put the show on the air. And I think NBC threw it on just to fill a half-hour slot. And it had an enormous critical response. And then all of a sudden, people started to rethink. But the fact that we seem to be rising in the ratings so steadily, and that much older people, you know, my mother's generation seems to be taking to it. Some teenagers are taking to it. College kids are taking to it. No one is more surprised about that than all of us.
Hmm. My guest is Jason Alexander, who plays George Costanza in the sitcom Seinfeld. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is actor Jason Alexander. Now, you got a Tony Award for Best Actor in the Broadway musical Jerome Robbins, Broadway. You were the narrator, and I believe you also wrote the script for it that you had to read, the part you had to read.
Yeah, it's very easy to win awards when you write your own part. The Robbins show, just the quick background on that was that Jerry knew he wanted to do all these numbers. He just didn't know how to make an evening of it. And the idea was that he was going to have someone sort of host or narrate the evening, which sounded very unexciting to me. And the idea became, well, why don't you create the way to do that? And what I did essentially is I became a character from every show represented, sometimes to great use and sometimes just for 20 seconds so that it could get into a dance number. And the result was that I was playing about 14 different characters in the course of the night. And in that particular season, it was a very flashy role. It was not a very substantial role, but it was pretty flashy. And so they threw an award at me.
How did you learn to sing and dance? And I should say, you know, that just seeing you as George on Seinfeld, I wouldn't see you and say, well, there's a music comedy star. Do you know what I mean? I just hadn't thought of you as singing.
Yeah. I don't know. I was always, I think I probably went into acting because of musicals. When I was a kid, I was just drawn to show music. My mother says that we used to take long family vacations, and I would sing the complete scores of show albums in the car. My sister had a big collection of them, and it was just the music that I found the most interesting. And so when I was old enough to start going to the theater, my folks naturally took me to musicals, and it was all I wanted to do. So I was constantly singing, and I got serious about it, I guess, as a young teenager, and I started taking lessons and
singing lessons.
The dancing thing was just a natural offshoot. I was serious about being an actor when I was 13 and 14, and I said, well, I guess I can sing well enough now, but I've noticed that in these musicals, the singers often have to move, so maybe I should learn how to do that. And I went out to, you know, like a local dance school and started taking tap. And when I went to college as an acting major, you have to study ballet and jazz. And so it was a natural offshoot. But one thing that the Robbins show taught me, since I was working with 70 of the best dancers I've ever seen in my life, was that I'm not a dancer. I'm sort of fearless about moving. If they say you're going to do this, I go, okay. And I try and do it with enough pizzazz that nobody looks at my feet.
Did your friends rib you when you were young and taking tap dance lessons?
They never knew. I went 4 towns away. And I never talked about it, and I never displayed it, because I basically thought I'd be shot through the head by any one of them if they knew.
So, How did it feel to you to really love doing something that you felt you should be very embarrassed about?
Well, you know, that's sort of the way my whole childhood went. I always loved performing, and I did it as much as I could, but I was always scared to death to be on stage. Performing was an offshoot for me from the fact that when I was a very small child, I was really very, very fat. And to prevent other kids from being mean to me, I would just entertain. Usually what I did is I memorized comedy albums. When I was a kid, there was lots of comic. Every comic did an album. And I would just memorize their material and start doing it. And, you know, and the kids thought I was making it up. I was telling Bill Cosby stories about growing up black in Philadelphia. And they all went, hey, did that really happen to you? And I, yeah, right. You know, it wasn't that I hid my performance things. I hid anything that would label me, you know, the big term in school, and you run and cry if anyone called you a fag. So I tried to hide the faggier things about what I was doing. I wouldn't sing around the halls of the school. I would only sing when I had to, and I never danced in school. You know, I waited until I got out. And unfortunately, I think a lot of young people do that. You hide a lot of who you are and what you are, because you're afraid to not fit in. And I went that route until many, many years later.
Although you felt you shouldn't let your friends know about these interests of yours, were you confident that they were really legitimate interests yourself?
On my part, yeah. I knew that I was very serious about this. The first time I really set foot on a stage, I mean, it sounds silly, but it was my bar mitzvah. And I was 13 years old, and I got up, and I had all these lines and all these songs and a packed house, and my name was on the marquee outside.
And on the matchbooks,
I'm
sure.
And I made a ton of money. And I said, you know, this is not a bad thing. I could really enjoy this. And I got very serious about it. And I always knew that this was what I was going to do. And thankfully, I had a family that was supportive of it. But it was just a matter of not... While as a teenager, not letting other people really get too in on it, because they could have been cruel enough and I was weak enough that they could have destroyed it for me. So mm-hmm. It was just self-preservation.
How self-conscious were you about your weight when you were young?
Oh, Terry, I never had a good-looking year as a teenager. You know what I'm saying? I was fat until I was 17. I had braces for 9 years. And when I was 18, I started losing my hair. I could not get a break, Terry. I was as self-conscious as not. Actually, I was less self-conscious about the weight than anything else, because I never looked as heavy as I was. And and I avoided mirrors. So I didn't, I didn't look too hard. The braces I knew were there because they were cutting my lips from the inside. And the hair I knew was going because I would get sunburnt on the top of my head. But, it wasn't until I actually got sick as a teenager. I became asthmatic and I couldn't catch my breath to eat. So I started losing weight, and they said, that's a good idea for you to keep doing that. And I've been fighting that battle ever since.
So what was your early stabs? What were your early stabs at show business?
Actually, my whole career was so incredibly lucky. I was fooling around and doing all kinds of community theater and children's theater in New Jersey, where I was growing up. And I got involved with this children's theater group that was asked to videotape two of their shows for local television in New York. And we did that, and we all had to join AFTRA in order to be in it. So at age 17, I was in the union. And an agent in New York saw the shows and asked me to join the company. So I had an agent at age 17 while I was still in high school. And I skipped that whole phase that most actors go through where they pound the streets going, help me, somebody help me. And I went to college with all this in hand. And I started doing commercials then. And
what kind of commercials?
Oh, man, I did commercials, one of which is still running. My most famous one was for Western Union, where there's a kid at a police station, and the cop is standing there with reflector glasses, and he's calling his father, and he says, Dad, is there any way you could send them the cash today? And I get the cash, and I go back to the cop and say, keep in touch. That's still running.
I remember that one.
That was a biggie. I did commercials for, I was the original McDLT man when the McDonald's created that product. I did Canada Dry. I did Bic razors with John McEnroe. I think I did almost 100 commercials when I was doing commercials regularly.
Now, your birth name was Greenspan, yes?
Yeah.
Yeah. When did you change it to Alexander?
The minute I could. I changed it when I went to AFTRA to get that union card. My name is J. Scott Greenspan. And I always grew up sort of hating the name because Greenspan was one of those names that was just so easy on the playground to make fun of. It was green, fill in the blank or whatever. And I said, I got to get rid of this thing as soon as I can. So I was going to use Jason because I always thought Jason was stronger than Jay and it, you know, had this sort of Herculean image of myself. And I was going to use Jason Scott. And I went into AFTRA and they said, what is your name going to be? And I said, Jason Scott. And they said, we have 19 of them. Pick something else. And I had never thought about anything else. So I felt bad about dropping my family name. So I took my father's first name, which was Alexander. And they said, okay, fine. And boom, it was done.
Very ethnically neutral name.
Isn't it, though? And I'll tell you the other advantage it has. When you're in the cast list and it's alphabetical, boy, that works out very well.
Oh, that's
in fact,
true.
I was thinking of changing my name to Jason A. Alexander, just to ensure that I would always be at the top.
Did that enter into your choosing it?
Not at all. No, uh-huh. I was too naive at that point to think that I would ever be anything other than, you know, star billing above the title.
One last thing, you know, one of the musicals I really wish I'd seen, but it was only open for 2 weeks, was Stephen Sondheim's Merrily We Roll Along, in which you had a part. Was that a great disappointment for you when it closed so quickly?
Yes and no. It hurt in that it was the first, you know, I always thought anything I touched would turn to gold because, you know, in high school I was the big star, in college I was the big star, and things were always great. And here was my first entree into the professional world, and I worked as hard as I could, and it was with, you know, the legends of the business, and it didn't go. And that was a real education and a disappointment.
One last question. You used to do impressions as a kid. Do you still do impressions of people?
Very few. I live my life as a walking impression of William Shatner. I do Woody Allen from time to time, and I've been known to throw a Don Adams in here and there, and I do a lot of obscure cartoon characters that nobody remembers anymore. But if they turned to me and said, okay, you're an impressionist, go make a living, I would be quickly on welfare.
I don't think I could let you leave without at least a sentence worth of William Shatner.
Oh, William Shatner?
Uh-huh.
Terry, I want to say that I have enjoyed this interview immensely. And I hope that we can continue it some other time.
Great. Oh, Jason Alexander, a real pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Wish you the best.
Thanks.
Jason Alexander co-stars in the NBC sitcom Seinfeld. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.